We're back with a special bonus episode on the best television shows of 2016. The gang is back, or at least part of it, and had to step away, but we have Kristen and Martin here. Welcome back. We're jumping off from our previous episode, our previous year in review show, to talk about the boob tube. Believe it or not, when we aren't busy watching movies, we will occasionally deign to watch television. Sometimes we don't even hate ourselves afterwards. without further ado, here are our top five shows of the year. Okay, who wants to kick us off? Martin, you want to go first? Number five.
Sure. I mean, before I list my number five, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Over the Garden Wall, which is technically like 2013 or 14, but I only watched it this year, and I really like that. And I think Natasha Leggero does a voice on it, so that's she'll be coming up again. But my number five is Fargo Season 2.
Okay.
Which I haven't technically finished yet. But, I don't. Maybe it would be higher if I finished it. I haven't seen season one, but yeah. I know people said like it's its own story. So I thought like, why not start? Second one.
Wasn't that last year?
Like, at the end of each episode, they usually have like. I thought it was this year.
Okay. Fargo season maybe, two. Maybe it's different.
Early in the year.
Know. Yeah.
I don't know, but like it's set in the 1979. And it's sort of this like sprawling crime story, but there's like strange things. And at the end of every episode, they have like usually a cover of a song from a Coen Brothers movie, which kind of made me think of the show as just like, oh, it's like watching a cover band of Coen Brothers isms. Mm. So I think if people want to just like have Coen Brothers lights, if they just like need to get that in their system in between Hail Caesars, That's probably the show for them.
Okay.
I don't know. It's got Bruce Campbell playing Ronald Reagan, which is pretty cool, I think.
All right.
It's worth seeing, I think. Okay. Maybe I'll get to the end and change my mind.
Yeah, that's what I was told. I didn't see it, but I was told the ending got mixed reviews.
Maybe so I won't finish it.
Yeah. If you like it, maybe stop. Quit while you're ahead, you know? But yeah, or keep going. I don't think there are that many episodes in the season, but cool. Sales, you got number five?
Sure, yeah. Because I didn't just
write it right now.
Make these up right now.
Yeah.
I love television. Yeah. I love it so much that I immediately forget what I've watched. But looking over what actually aired on television these days, most of it is not on television per se. Mm-hmm. So my first one is a Netflix show, Lady Dynamite, the Maria Bamford, because every weird outsider LA comedian has a TV show now, and now Maria Bamford does.
Yep.
And Maria Bamford is delightful and the best, and Lady Dynamite is a show about having horrible bipolar depression and also pugs. And its theme song is a parody on Foxy Brown, and it's just delightful. And it takes place in Eagle Rock. There's a lot of like very specific things that appeal to me specifically, which is the east side of Los Angeles, mental illness, cute dogs, the inability to deal with one's day-to-day life, and Maria Bamford. So if any of those things appeal to you, you will probably enjoy the absurdist humor, the sort of fantasy sequences, the weird breaking out into songs, and just kind of, I just really loved it.
Yeah. That is not a show for everyone.
It really
but it
isn't.
Is definitely a show for me. I loved it.
Yeah.
I think like that is what television is for. It's
right.
For like very, like bite-size, equal parts like absurd and poignant.
Yeah, and also just like meta humor. Like there's really no reason in this day and age to have a show on Netflix that doesn't comment on itself, that isn't in some way, you know, postmodern or, you know, a commentary on the form, because I feel like it's a form that is so familiar to so many people. Like it's very hard to play it straight. Mm-hmm. I think, and there's no reason that you have to. Mm-hmm. And this TV show like definitely takes advantage of the fact that like people are pretty savvy, and they know that a lot of these shows that come up are not too dissimilar from each other. So why try to like pretend that this isn't like one in a series of shows that are stylistically similar to that, and make jokes about that?
Sure. Yeah, but it's also it's really bonkers.
It is. I think there's a pretty good, like, Arrested Development overlap.
Yeah.
I think Mitch Hurwitz is an executive producer on this, too. So there is a lot of, like, if you're into that, it's definitely out there. Yeah. Like, it's not, there aren't a lot of, like, straight setup punchline jokes in this.
Yeah. No.
And Maria Bamford, like, if you're familiar with her, you either love her or you don't. So if you don't, like, don't watch the show.
Yeah.
Because if her stand-up doesn't appeal to you, you're not going to like the show at all. Yeah. Like, it doesn't normalize her stand-up at all. It's, if anything, it's an even more elaborate, bigger budget version of the kind of stuff that she does in her stand-up.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, shout out to Lady Dynamite for actually being funny. Like, yes. How many comedies are there that are not comedies at all?
You mean just, like, shows about comedians?
Yeah.
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 That aren't funny?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yay! Go Maria Bamford. My number five, my whole top five list is basically just a reshuffling of everything I said last year, pretty much. So, number five, Jane the Virgin. I love that show. I think it's, again, equal parts poignant and hilarious. And it definitely, the sort of very meta, very knowing, understands and plays with the form really well. And it's a form that doesn't get a lot of love. Telenovelas are not a very highly regarded genre, but I think there's a lot to play with there, and they're very deft about it. And I love Petra Solano so much. Team Petra. And I think, you know, this fell, I think, a couple spots, mostly because the third season has been a little bit lackluster thus far, but I have faith that they will turn it around. It just needs more Petra. Mm. so, yeah. Okay, number four, Martin.
My number four, it's The Night Of. And I think it started really, really strong. I think you could probably watch those first two episodes almost like a feature film separate from the rest of the series, which I think eventually has maybe a lot of the problems that are sort of inherent in telling like a long form show. Mm-hmm. And at first, like the cast is really great, and it had the actor from A Separation and About Ellie, the Iranian actor, mm-hmm. in it playing the father. And like, as soon as I saw him, I thought like, oh, is this going to be like an American A Separation and sort of expand outward that way? And I think like maybe it tried to at first and then sort of realized that it couldn't, and then sort of by the end maybe it said like, ah, it's about this, and tried to play it off as being about something that I thought maybe it wasn't really set up to be. But it was still like sort of going from week to week, it was kind of fun to follow. That's
all right.
I don't mean to like damn it with like faint praise. Yeah. Like I mean, I almost would recommend people just watch the first two episodes on their own and then imagine where the rest goes and just sort of play it off as if it were a Asghar Farhadi movie. I don't know.
I mean, I think you're getting at the sort of inherent problem of television, which is like most of the time these series don't stick the landing.
No.
And they have like a very clear idea of what they initially want to say, and then it sort of goes off the rails
because you have so too much overhyped.
Yeah. Yeah, that and that as well. Like I don't know if they're filmmakers or like these showrunners just enough rope to hang themselves. Like what could have been a taut psychological thriller then becomes like this bloated sort of aimless thing.
Right. Like I think television, like I've heard a lot of people say television's better than film now. I don't think it is. I think maybe television's more addictive than film.
Absolutely.
Because you can sort of string people along. I mean, there's going to be another show I'll mention that I think was basically mostly that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, a lot of shows, like, you know, as much as we like to hail, you know, oh, it's a complex drama and stuff, you look at them really, and they're not so different from, like, old serials of, like, what's going to happen to Walt and Jesse next week? Yeah. Tune in. Like, you know, it's sort
absolutely.
Of, I feel like it's, I don't know. I'm not like a huge television person, and that's partly why it's like really rare, I think, to see somebody pull off a long form story that feels complete and coherent, and you know, isn't full of just like superfluous material. But
Well, I'll wrap this up at the end, but let's just keep going. Okay, number four, Kristen.
Number four is another sort of limited series. I think it's six episodes that was recommended to me, and I don't know how I would have heard about it otherwise, but it's this British television show called Fleabag on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. Another kind of almost a serious version of Lady Dynamite. Actually, same condition, I think.
Hmm.
Doesn't the lady on Fleabag also...
Is she bipolar?
No, she's not.
No, I don't know. She's dealing with some stuff.
She's dealing with some stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a youngish woman who's dealing with the death of her best friend and is just kind of misanthropic and seriously depressed, but not dealing with it. And it's about her relationship with her mother, Olivia Colman.
Yes, indeed, her stepmother.
Her stepmother, Olivia Colman.
Standout performance. Oh,
right,
she's
and
so fantastic.
Dealing with a sort of a dying business, which is tied in because she was in business with her best friend who died, so it's that constant reminder. And it's constantly breaking the fourth wall in that it's a direct address to the audience, which for the first couple episodes, I have to be honest, did not work for me. It really grated on me, and I was like, oh, is this the whole show? Is it going to be this gimmick? But it really develops in the second half of the season, and I think it really pays off in terms of format. It's a very acerbic, very tough show to watch, but it's rewarding because I think the humor gets better and you start to understand more where it's coming from and what the point of view of the the show is.
Yes. I feel like I have mixed feelings about the show, but I do feel very invested in that character and I really want to see her get well. That's one you talk about addicting. Like, I gobbled that up. It's six episodes and I just could not wait to get through them. I don't know, I had issues with the overall story. It did seem a little, I don't know, soap opera. Like, it did, I don't think it needed her to betray her best friend. Like, there were some plotty things that I thought were a little bit silly. But overall I thought that was excellent, and I loved the relationship with the sister. And that could have very easily been in my top five.
Right.
But for number four, I have Transparent. That was my number one last year. It didn't have the same spark. Like, last year was exceptional. Like, that was one of the best seasons of television ever. Like, we talk about satisfying narratives and, like, just the combination of, like, the visuals with the story, and the acting, like, everything really came together in season two. Season three, it felt a little bit aimless. Like, nothing was really funny. The moments that were supposed to be devastating were just kind of, I felt they were kind of muted. But where it really redeemed itself was that final episode. I loved that final episode.
Shelley,
she's always been... I've never actually really liked that character. She seemed like she was from a different universe. Like, she's playing Jewish mother stereotype. But then suddenly she became the hero of the show.
It's almost like they realized that they had Judith fucking Light.
Yeah.
And they gave her something to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like that thing, they were like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Maybe we have a secret weapon here, which is this fantastic actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Shelley finally gets her moment.
That's right.
And that was... A lot of my favorite moments of 2016 were musical moments.
To Shell and Back.
Yeah. To Shell and Back.
To Shell and Back. It's a great pun.
It really is. All right. Number three, Martin.
My number three is Stranger Things, which was like a huge buzzed about thing. I think like... People like the nostalgia pie of it seemed to be the appeal. Like, you know, it's a little bit of Stephen King and John Carpenter, and it's trying to mix all these things together. Even though I think, like, it feels less like any of those as much as it feels like J.J. Abrams' Super 8 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of funny. Like, it made me think a little bit how, like, an era isn't a tone. So you kind of have these, like, weird gaps where it's, like, trying to evoke E.T. and then trying to evoke The Thing. And, like, it just, I don't know, it felt like a bit of a tonal stretch at times. But, I don't know, it had Winona Ryder in it. And
it was sort of,
it sure did. You know, it was fun to sort of, like, turn off the brain a little bit. And I think, like, maybe if I was younger, maybe I would have liked it more. Although, like, I'm not sure if younger people, like, if that sort of 80s exploitation appeals.
I think if you were just a few years older.
Or maybe if I was older. Yeah. Like, maybe the ideal audience is, like, 35-year-olds.
I don't know. Yeah.
Like, but, I don't. I watched it. I watched it to the end, so I enjoyed it. I'm glad it wasn't longer. Like I think like the number of episodes, like 6 or 7. I think that was like the right amount for doing what it was, and it sort of reminded me a little bit of like.
I think you're right. Like Super 8 is the Super 8 the TV show.
Right, it's Super 8 the TV show, so if that sounds good to you, you know, it's sort of fun in that way, I think, if you can get past certain things.
I am so in the tank for a Renaissance. The fact that I did not gobble this up, I think, speaks to how I feel about this whole exercise. But, I mean, you know, if you liked it, more power to you,
well,
you know.
I mean, it's also like, it's a little bit like filtered through... Not even like nostalgia, like it's sort of funny how like the kids have posters of like The Thing up, and that movie flopped, and like kids definitely did not see it. Like it's very clearly like for the filmmakers and for the audience. Like it's not a very constructed world. I didn't think like it very is like it's like a real salad of a TV show. You know, it's not like they tried to create something that was really that coherent or had that much integrity. But
Sales, did you watch it?
No, okay, I didn't. Yeah. But you're doing a really great job of making me you. Never.
Yeah, this is your number three.
My honestly, number three. Honestly, the thing on top I was just shaking my head, like, oh boy, a movie with no integrity, or a TV show with no integrity.
Yeah.
That's just empty pastiche for people who aren't familiar with the reference, but they want to be up on whatever's happening on Netflix. That sounds like my nightmare. So I am super glad that I decided to skip this.
But it has Winona
Ryder. I don't care. I don't need to be in on memes.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah. Like, that's the kind of show where it's like, hey, you want a meme for a TV show? Here it is. Yeah. Like, not interested. No, thank you.
All right, my number three, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. So good. If you are not watching the show, please start. Like, if you like musicals, people seem to be liking musicals lately. This is a great musical. Every song is of a different genre. Which is like what a burden to place on your songwriters, you know, like you can't have just musical songs. They got to be, this one's Music Man, this one's 80s power ballad, this one's, you know, ska, this one's rap, like, oh my God. And yet somehow it all works because the actors are so game. This latest season, unlike Jane the Virgin, like I really feel like they are making progress with the characters and really sort of emphasizing the relationships between the female characters more, which I approve of because I don't really care which horrible dude she ends up with. I'm excited to see where it goes, and I'm cautiously optimistic because this seems like it's such a tightrope they're walking. Like, it could so easily go bad. And they could so easily start treading water. But so far, it has continued to be delightful. And I think no one is watching. So please, please watch. I would really like to see this show continue.
Mm.
Okay. Number two, Martin.
Hold on.
You didn't do yours. Oh, did I skip you? Damn.
You did. It's okay.
All right. Go ahead.
It's my number three is Full Frontal with Samantha Bee.
Ah, yes.
Just because it... is kind of like a half an hour of sanity every week. And also like a real id reactionary, like kind of direct address, like the world's on fire and here's why. But it's not trying to temper that reaction at all. It's just like, look is what's happening and isn't this crazy? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a cathartic, It's more cathartic than something like The Daily Show in its prime, which was always just kind of like, isn't this horrible and aren't these people stupid? And it seems in a way almost more hopeful than that kind of model, or like The Colbert Show, which was always just kind of like arch satire. This one is more like directly down the pipe, like, these people are idiots and here's what you should do about it. And I really... relate to and appreciate the feminine rage.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is the embodiment of Sambi in her fabulous blazers. Yes. So
yes.
I just, I feel like I'm going to rely on that show a lot.
Yeah.
In the coming months.
Yes. Yeah. Of all the late night shows, like, and all the late night hosts, hers is the voice that I most want to hear whenever something horrible happens.
Yes.
Because, like, there's no, like, there's irony because it's comedy and there's always some element of irony, mm-hmm. or usually. But it's not, it doesn't ever go over the edge into kind of, I don't know, like a cheekiness or...
No, and there's also like a lot of optimism.
Yeah.
And she does pieces that are sort of reportage, but in a positive way. Like, she's done a lot of coverage on the Syrian refugee crisis, but like actually talking to the Syrian refugees. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a lot. I wouldn't say it's a news show, but I would say that they're not afraid to actually take political stances on things, mm-hmm. which I think is something that the quote-unquote fake news people have always really struggled with, which is, we're not a news show, we don't take sides, and this show is kind of just like, actually, you need to take a side because this is serious. Mm-hmm. And so they don't shy away from, like,
yeah,
really kind of doing stuff and being like, actually, we're gonna say this, yeah. and we're not gonna compromise.
Yeah. And she's not smug, which I think,
yes,
makes it so much easier. Like, I don't think she thinks she's above her audience. I don't even think she, like, I think you sense the anger, which a lot has been written about, angry female on TV, uh-oh.
Yeah.
But also, like, there's fear, and
it's very, like, vulnerable.
It's, yeah, yeah.
It's more, and it's vulnerable in a way that people need.
Yeah.
There's no real, there's a very little distance between her and the audience, and I think people, and I know I appreciate that, mm-hmm. because it's like, it's kind of like having a conversation with your friend over dinner and you're just like, let's talk about all this crazy shit. And then you kind of just, but you feel better after, mm-hmm. just because you've had a conversation with someone that you love and respect, mm-hmm. in
yeah.
a way.
Yeah.
Sambi, hit me up. Yep. Be my best friend, Sambi. but yeah, I, you know, the show's not perfect, but I really do look forward to kind of decompressing from the week, mm-hmm. by watching it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Number two, Martin. Okay. Hit me with your number two.
Westworld. Yeah. It's
like, after all that. You're picking, like, all of the worst shows. I love this top
it's
five.
It's what I watched.
It's like a bottom five.
I mean, like, truthfully, like, there are films, there are shows that, like, I'll watch during the year, but it's a lot of, like, you know, same, like, you know, it's, it would be like, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia every year if it was, like...
That's okay.
So these are sort of like five new shows that I tried out that I watched.
Okay.
And I think like Nolan and Abrams being behind a show, you sort of know already, like you could almost write a critique ahead of time knowing where it's going to go. But it was sort of like, I'm trying to think of like the most positive way to say it. you know, so many of the actors I enjoyed seeing on screen, like Jeffrey Wright and Thandie Newton and Tessa Thompson was in it. Anthony Hopkins playing a sort of Trump-like character at times, I thought. I think, like, a good sort of show to follow from week to week and sort of say, oh, like, can you believe what just happened? And talk about that with people. Like, I think that part of it I enjoyed, and like there's like a lot of clumsy kind of stuff, like all the exposition, the way it's handled, or like the you know like TV shows, like they'll have like a moment that should just be like a moment, but they stretch it out into like a story thread because that's what you do with shows. But mm-hmm. I thought it was funny how like the show itself, a lot of it was sort of about almost like the way they ran the park, almost like the way you'd run a TV show, thinking about all the different story threads and how like disruption in one might affect the other, and I thought that was maybe a little bit interesting, you know. And then there were good moments in it. That's okay. I had fun watching it.
All of your defenses are so weak. It's like this wasn't right. The worst thing in the world.
Yeah,
I love it.
I don't. I'm not. Sorry.
That's no, I mean, okay. It's hilarious, but I feel like that's a lot of the way that people talk about this event, these kind of event television mm-hmm. things. Because, like, I didn't watch mm-hmm. Westworld, but I watched The Night Of, and I enjoyed it until it became unenjoyable. But right. I feel like there's a kind of, people have this investment in justifying these shows just because culturally they've put so much energy in true. Saying that they're fantastic. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get into this like self-perpetuating thing where it's like, well, I've already like put in all the time. I might as well stick it out, even though all I do is gripe about how bad this is. Yeah. I feel right. like there's a little bit of an abusive relationship yes. happening between like culture and these TV shows.
Yeah.
And like that's one reason like I don't really watch that much TV, but like I think like a show like Westworld is maybe especially exemplary of it, where they like throw enough production quality behind it and throw like Hollywood actors and throw like enough that it sort of looks like it's going to be like a film but mm-hmm. longer, you know. And then you watch it and it's like full of just like all the problems that TV has. Like I think throwing in, as you know, as much as I like the cast and I like the look of it, like it doesn't really elevate it at the end of the day.
Wow.
you know, and I think that's like a lot of television right yeah. now, when people talk about like, oh, television's great. What they're really talking about is like, there are people I recognize in it, that they're shot with better cameras. It looks more like film, but I don't think it is.
Yeah.
yeah. You know, I think there are like just inherent problems you run into in trying to tell a serious dramatic story.
Yeah.
You know, it's like rare to have, you know, like Todd Haynes, Mildred Pierce, or like a Berlin Alexander Platz or something like that. You know, I think like those are the exception. That's not the regular mm-hmm. thing that you see when you flick on
yeah.
TV.
Yeah. All right. Sales.
Okay. My number two choice is the OJ show, the People versus OJ Simpson.
Okay.
Going back to the beginning of the year, more positive times when we were all obsessed with the People versus OJ Simpson, American Crime Story. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people are really saying that, OJ Made in America is great, and I agree, but I slightly prefer the fictionalized on Fox limited series with a bunch of actors wearing wigs, and I just kind of like the courtroom drama-ness of it. I'm a real sucker for that.
I mean, that's such a theatrical trial that it sort of makes sense to dramatize it in that way.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
It makes sense to have John Travolta in it, and yeah.
No, I'm totally with the stunt casting. I'm totally with David Schwimmer. I'm entirely in the bag for the Marcia Clark, Chris Darden, you know, Sarah Paulson, Sterling K. Brown, like, chemistry off the charts. I'm into all of it. I really thought, I just loved watching it week to week, you know, in that way that it's hard, now that, like, television is so either instantaneous or whatever, there's not a lot of, like, just watching a show on broadcast television and waiting a week for the new episode, and it's like it's about something that you know what happens, you know, and every episode you know what it's going to be. Oh, this is the Marcia Clark episode, okay, or this is the Judge Ito episode. It's like, you know, but there is a certain pleasure in that, and just to see how they're going to dramatize these things, which you know are so inherently dramatic anyway. And I can't wait to watch it again once it hits streaming. So
yeah, well, that needs to happen soon.
Yeah, come please. On Fox,
come on,
get it together.
Yeah. Okay, my number two, Orange is the New Black.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I guess not everyone liked it as much as I did, but I thought this was one of their strongest seasons. It's always struggled, like, whether or not it was a comedy or a drama, and this season I felt like they really decided, we're going for drama.
Yeah.
And, obviously there are issues with the whole, like, they killed the lesbian character. They killed the most beloved lesbian character on the show.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Yeah, you're gonna have to be more specific.
Yeah.
no, but I think to your point, it's like they got politicized.
Yeah, they did.
And they decided to make comments on, or use whatever power they have as a television show, as a popular television show, to tap into, quote-unquote, how we live now.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of those worked. But I think some of them were a little on the nose.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely fair. Poussey did not need to be the world's most perfect human. That stuck the deck, and yeah. That was unfair.
And what they did to Lori Petty, I feel like they really kind of were
like the whole Lori Petty arc.
No, I did too. But I mean, I feel like that what they did is they were like, okay, Piper has to, nothing could happen to Piper, right? So they just decided to hit all of the characters that everybody loves and decimate them to a certain extent, or ignore them in the case of Laverne Cox. So it was kind of like they really, I think their hands were sort of tied either by actor schedules or by the writing itself, and they really sort of were like, we're going to get rid of all the stuff that works for you, and you're just going to have to deal with it in terms of suffering.
I mean,
Natasha Lyonne was also gone for a really long time.
But
I mean,
she
it's
was
like,
back. Like, that was what I thought that made the season. Like, she was gone for season three, and I thought, and as soon as she came back, like, I thought the show really took off again.
Yeah.
And that it was that was striking to me, like, how much she is needed in that cast. Mm-hmm. And also, Kate Mulgrew, obviously. And I was so glad to be done with that stupid Red Healy storyline. That was awful. Mm-hmm. The show has always sort of sidestepped the political aspect. Or it's always kind of been subtext in here. They made it text. Like, this, they are foregrounding this situation. And maybe it was just the mood I was in this year where I was like, you know what? This needs to get addressed.
Now that the season's coming back to me, there were a lot of good moments.
Okay, good.
I just feel like it's I always just like binge through Orange is the New Black so quickly that I forget actually what happened. And then there's such a long gap between the new seasons.
Right.
I always have to constantly remember. But you're right. It was a good, I think it was a strong season.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And also there was a Cabaret reference and an All About Eve reference. And sold.
Just blatant pandering to your interests.
Thank you. Yeah. although the first episode with that Papa Roach, what the hell was that?
Yeah, that's a bad cue.
What was that?
That's a very bad cue.
Anyway, let's move on.
they can't all be Rebel Girl.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Oh, anyway, okay. So number one TV show of the year, Martin.
Okay, there was one TV show that I unabashedly liked this year that was new to me, and that was Another Period by Natasha Leggero and Ricky Lindholm, who I mentioned Ricky Lindholm last year watching Garfunkel and Oates. Mm-hmm. So it was great to kind of find something new that had similar sense of humor. It's kind of making fun of the period dramas, costume dramas, stuff like Downton Abbey. It's so... It cracks me up, like, is sort of the short of it.
Yeah,
it just
that
sort
is
of
fair.
Cheers me up, makes me laugh. I think it's a really great comedy show, for me anyway.
All right, I like it. I like it. Go comedy. Sales, number one.
I have a comedy pick, and then I also have a real life pick.
Oh.
And I don't know which one to go with.
I don't know what that means, so go with both, yeah.
Okay, so my feel-good comedy pick, the shows that I've enjoyed the most, and I've probably watched the most, is the collected works of Billy Eichner. So Billy on the Street and Difficult People, which is the Julie Klausner show, where he and Julie Klausner play... very lightly fictionalized versions of themselves. And I just don't think I've watched anything that have made me laugh as much and feel as good, especially Billy on the Street. Billy on the Street is, like, honestly what I watch, like, if I've had a bad day or just am feeling despairing of the world in general, which has been so often this year. I've watched so many episodes of Billy on the Street, it's, like, embarrassing. But if you just want to watch something that is just pure comedy with no consequences, no plot, and the new Billy on the Streets are so so complicated art direction wise. There are so many incredible games that people play that are just, you can't even believe that they came out of somebody's brain. And the Difficult People, I think, is just, it's kind of the antidote to the golden age of television kind of TV show that you get, like a Westworld or something like that, where it's just a straight up sitcom with, like, jokes. And I can't emphasize mm-hmm. how good, and I wish that a sitcom with jokes was not an anachronism, but it is. It reminds me of something like Seinfeld, where you don't have to care about the characters, and the characters do not make you care about them. They're sitcom characters. Everyone knows it. They just get into wacky situations. There are setups and punchlines and people behaving badly, and that's the comedy. And it's hilarious. And I just wish, like, why aren't there more shows that just have no qualms about writing a joke and delivering it and being funny. And that's what difficult people is.
You're here.
I love Billy Eichner.
I just really want to say that my actual favorite thing about 2016 is Julie Klausner's dogs.
Yes.
She's a pair of Basset Hounds.
Those Basset Hounds.
Oh my God.
I mean, they're even better than the pugs, I think, in
they
Lady
really
Dynamite.
Are.
They're really good.
Okay, let's just take a sec.
Do you want me to say my real life ones too?
Yes, please.
Okay, so these are like not fictionalized television shows. They're just like actual things that happened on television.
Okay.
One is the World Series this year.
Okay, yeah.
Which I feel like was some of the best drama, arguably cinema, but it was airing on television. So I'll say that the Cubs versus the Cleveland baseball team, whose name I will not say, was fascinating and incredibly dramatic and really just kind of like the kind of World Series that you imagine when you think of like a perfectly dramatic, like in terms of baseball, it was like the apex of baseball, like everything you want to happen or don't want to happen because you're ripping your hair out happened. And it was like, it's just so cinematic and so fantastic. And I honestly, I'm like not a huge baseball fan, but I would watch those seven games again, okay, just like as a movie. And the other thing, which is probably the best thing that in borderline, maybe the only good thing that happened this year, which was, on Jeopardy, which is my favorite, one of my favorite shows. Recently, there was a series of games with a contestant called Cindy Stowell, who managed to win six games and over $100,000. The thing about her is that she had stage four colon cancer while she was shooting the episodes, and she actually passed away before the episodes aired. So the thing about her was that she had applied to be on Jeopardy, and she wrote them and said, I have stage four colon cancer. My doctor's given me 6 months to live. Is there any way that I can take the Jeopardy test as soon as possible to see if I can get on the show? They accommodated her. She took the Jeopardy test. She got in. She was able to film a series of episodes, and she kept winning. She won for six games. She told them, she was like, well, since I have 6 months to live, I'll just donate all my winnings to cancer research. And so that's exactly what happened. She was, the other contestant said she was competing against, didn't know her condition. She was on like an incredible amount of medication while she was filming the shows. She had a high fever. She was really sick, but she still managed to fulfill her dream of being a Jeopardy champion, and she won it fair and square. And I feel like that's kind of, and she got more than $100,000 for cancer research. So I feel like in a year where there have been a lot of really shitty stories, that's like a really, really good story,
yeah,
that people should kind of be focusing on.
Yeah.
And like, it was on television.
Yeah.
And like, you can experience kind of the like joy and sadness, but also like uplifting story of that.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, I've been really like holding on to that as a media narrative because I feel like it's so much better than a lot of the media narratives that we have at our disposal.
Yes.
So Cindy Stowell is probably the person of the year for me.
Damn. I wish we'd gone to you last.
Oh,
that
sorry.
That was a good way to close this out. Shit. All right. So mine is, my number one is OJ Made in America. So if you can take the Ryan Murphy one, or you can take this one, you can take them both. And I wasn't sure if this should go in the film or TV category since it originally aired on TV. I'm going with TV. I don't know. It's depressing how impactful and still relevant the proceedings of the O.J. Simpson trial are today. We have not dealt with any of the issues that are addressed in the documentary. I didn't see the TV show, so I can't really speak to the comparisons or what the focus is of the TV show versus the documentary. My understanding is that there is more of an emphasis on rehabilitating Marcia Clark in the TV show.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. More about the trial and it's less about OJ.
Okay.
So the documentary is really about contextualizing where OJ comes from and how all of the issues that came into play at the trial were already in play in his career.
Yeah.
So it's really more about him, and the TV show is much less about him.
Okay. There were, as far as 7 hours of television, I don't think there were seven more gripping hours of television this year. And it's still, I mean, it was emotionally manipulative in the way that documentaries are allowed to be. Like, this isn't journalism. This is a person with a thesis, and he set out to prove a point, and I think he did it masterfully. And yeah, it's stunning, really. Yeah.
I wonder, did either of you see the Ava DuVernay
the 13th?
Documentary 13th?
I didn't.
Not yet, no.
I know. It's see, I wanted to watch that too, but it's so lengthy. Yeah. I feel like there could be a whole episode on that and O.J. Made in America in terms of as two parallels trying to investigate almost the same thing, mm-hmm. but from one from an individual and one from a societal level. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I wish I would have gotten around to that this year, but it's like, it's a lot to take in.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I guess, okay.
It's on Netflix.
Right?
I don't have Netflix anymore, which is the problem. It's like all this stuff that people keep saying, oh, it's on Netflix. I have to go to somebody else's place to watch it.
You get together viewing party of 13th.
I mean,
sounds
that's
like a blast.
I have friends who would probably be up for that.
Okay. All right. Make that happen.
Maybe that'll happen. Yeah.
Make it happen. All right. Were there any other shows we wanted to mention before we sign off? Not a thing? All right. Well, I just quickly, we've talked about actual real life comedy shows that make us actually laugh that have jokes. I don't know if anyone is watching Superstore, but I think it's delightful. It's an NBC sitcom starring America Ferrera.
That's the show about Walmart, right?
Yeah.
People that work at Walmart.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
It's really funny. Believe it or not. I think it's delightful. I would like to see it continue. So please watch that. And then Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Not unproblematic.
Yeah.
But I think it made me laugh. Especially the Tilda Swinton joke.
It's a great joke.
Oh, my God.
It's an endearing image of the year. It's the Tilda Swinton.
On the pickup truck.
On the pickup truck.
Yep. All right. Well, in that case, let's call it a year, shall we?
We'll return after these messages.
Hi, this is Mariah E. Gates, also known as Old Films Flickr on the internet. Now, my top five TV shows are on two different networks because I don't watch a lot of television. So this is not really in any order, but kind of like the last one I'm going to talk about is really number one. And the number five is just at number five because it's the one I started watching the most recently. Number five was CW's Frequency. I was a fan of the movie and then the TV. So then I had forgotten this TV show was happening, and then I was on the CW because I was going to catch up with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and then it was like, you only have 2 days left to watch the pilot of Frequency, and I was like, oh shit, Frequency happened? So there were five episodes available to stream that night. This was like 11 o'clock at night, and I was like, well, I'll just watch the pilot, and then I'll, you know, have a couple of weeks to watch the other ones. I watched all five episodes in one binge, and then caught up with the whole rest of the season as it was airing, and there's like three episodes left. And I don't know if it's going to get picked up. So, but it's supposed to hit Netflix, a week after it, ends. So if you want to catch up with the whole thing, it'll be on Netflix like at the beginning of February. And I think it's great. It's got like sci-fi and it's got sci-fi and a father-daughter relationship and like time travel and sexism and serial killers and all kinds of things. It's like everything I want in a TV show. Following that, obviously, CW's Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which continues to be the best show about fucked up people, that's also a musical on television. There's a lot of growth for all the characters this season, and it had a lot of ups and downs and a really great homage to Marilyn Monroe, so always good. Number three was also the CW's Jane the Virgin, which continues to be just the most fun. It was just as soon as you think it's going like down crazy, unreal telenovela land, it'll hit you across the face with like some amazing, realistic piece of human drama that will just knock your breath away. So knock your breath away. Does it make sense? Anyways, so Jane the Virgin is beautiful. I love it. Number two, another show about television's most fucked up characters. You're the Worst. Sort of made me miss Los Angeles a little bit. I love the way they use Los Angeles as a character. And I love all the characters on the show. I don't think this season was as strong as last season, but there was a lot of great stuff with Edgar this season, and he's my favorite character. So I love this show. And the finale of this season was like a literal punch in the face. Like my face still hurts from it, actually. But FX, being the pals that they are, they brought a new show to the plate, and it is what? Atlanta. So I live in Atlanta now, and FX is like, oh, we heard you moved to Atlanta, so here's a show about Atlanta. Except this show is completely about the Black community in Atlanta. I think there isn't a single white person on the whole show. It's created and stars Donald Glover. His brother is one of the writers. Most of the writers are people he grew up with here in Atlanta. And it's so funny and insightful in terms of where we are as a country with race relations and where sort of society within the Black community finds itself. And it's just very insightful and very humorous and weird. And Donald Glover called it Twin Peaks, or Hip Hop Twin Peaks. And yes, two things you didn't really know were going to ever work together are meshed beautifully. So I just love this show so much. So thank you, FX and CW, for giving me all my favorite shows this year. And thank you again to Pauline for having me on for a second. And I can't wait to listen to everyone else's top picks for the year. And I'm sad that I didn't get to record this with everyone, but maybe next year. Maybe next year. 2017 is supposed to be a much better year, I hear. So, you know.
And that's the way we frame it. Flix-wise, that is. Listeners, did we leave your favorite show off the list? Come chastise for our egregious oversights on our website, flixwise.com. Or you can like us and leave us a comment on Facebook at facebook.com/flixwise. If you want to talk about Orange is the New Black, or you want to chat about the greatness of Petra Solano, you can come find me on Twitter. The handle is at FlixWise. But before you do all of that, please go to iTunes, give us all the stars, and leave us a nice comment. It won't take long. I promise it can be done between commercial breaks. On our next show, James Naramore joins me to talk about Orson Welles' Touch of Evil. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, Kristen, thanks for driving all the way to the West Side to come chat with me.
Always, Lady P.
Thank you. Martin.
Lady P.
You making room on that couch?
I'm sleeping on the couch.
I want that.
Well. I haven't owned a bed since 2013.
Oh, my God. All right, maybe I don't want to come to Canada.
Well, yeah, jeez. Canada, never mind.
Come on. Space is tight, apparently. It's going to be even tighter now that everyone's moving in. All right, well, all right. We'll catch you in 2017, y'all.